So, fire away.
Your dime, your consciousness.
My consciousness. Okay. All right. So I was reading this article, and the article, it was some meditation teacher in LA, right?
Yes.
So, and she was an actress, so already suspect, right? But she was saying that one thing she was saying, she said when she first started doing meditation, her teacher took her aside and said something like, meditation or spirituality or whatever, spiritual practice will ruin your life, right? Which I heard that before, but so she went on to talk about how, because she was real mindful and she was noticing, like with romantic relationships, she was getting a hit off of them, and she had a bunch of emotions and thoughts that were generating this, and so she was mindful about that and got detached, and so then she noticed that,
Too
like,
bad.
I guess, I don't know, but she was saying before this, she had like a greater sex drive than any of her sex partners. She was just insatiable.
That's
And
lovely news.
yeah, so that's great. And she was saying, but afterwards, right, suddenly for many months, like she didn't have much of any interest in sex, and she had a partner and whatever, he was patient with it. But
So glad to hear
yeah, and even when they would have sex, she wouldn't really enjoy it or whatever.
Why was she volunteering all of this TMI?
Oh, because she wrote a book, I guess, and
Oh.
I guess it was partly she's marketing it. It's like, of course
Yes.
she's going to make, because it's sex and spirituality and
Yes.
whatever, probably has a hot photo where she can put on the book cover where we can desire her at the same
Why
time of
not
her.
arouse your customers?
Yeah, for sure.
Sure.
So anyways, yeah, so I don't know, I wanted to hear what you thought of that stuff about, well, she said after several months, then one day it clicked back on again, and she was able to enjoy sex again and same sex drive basically. And
Oh, we're so thrilled for her.
but the thing was that whatever, there were new dimensions of sexuality that she was able to appreciate something like
Why not? Sure, why not?
that, right? And but yeah, I was kind of curious about that for the last couple of years, even though I maintain my fascination with women and meditation, and still try to pick them up, but it's still a lot more half-hearted than it used to be. And but
Ah, you're not taking your own lust so seriously.
yeah, I guess not. I mean, like, I still get interested in stuff, but it's kind of like it's part of a larger, problem where I kind of I lack a lot of motivation in a lot of areas, right? Where I don't know, before I used to have like much more palpable motivation.
So you
Maybe.
thought.
Yeah. So I thought. So what's up with that?
Well, just imagine a cornfield of mature plants, at night after everyone's gone to sleep, and they start gossiping amongst themselves about what they used to be, before they had big green leaves and, fecund, cobs full of golden sweet kernels of corn that would be eaten by goats, pigs, cows, or sweet corn eaten by humans, right? And you can hear the rustling all night long of all of the corn, miles and miles and miles of corn, whispering about themselves to themselves. It's kind of like that.
Okay, so it's octopus because it's with some hallucination from the past, or
well, even having an idea presently that there could be a past, you know, that has gifted us with a present hallucination is likewise hallucinatory. Right? I mean, everything you're feeling, thinking, imagining, portraying, identifying with, being entertained by, humorously or otherwise, is a presently appearing improvisational, right, dreamscape. You're applying meaning, perhaps cogent, right, meaning, perhaps hysterical, perhaps neutral, anecdotal accusation to your imagination. Your imagination only refers to itself. That's how it persists. And all stories that we tell, right, to ourselves, about ourselves, to other people, about other people, enjoying some good gossip or otherwise, is just, again, a presently appearing, right, hallucinatory, improvisational accusation about what we deem to be cogent, reliable, or binding reality. And it's not. So, enjoying sex, not enjoying sex, writing a book, having it have to have something to do with mindfulness or meditation or a teacher. You know, that's no better or worse than someone writing a book about how they love to remodel old cars. It's, you know, it's another kind of curious, if not entertaining, vicarious view into someone else's hallucination, which triggers in us more waves of bountiful hallucination, either envy or interest, right? Prurient curiosity, disinterest, dismissal, as if something that someone says is somehow, you know, true. And now I have an opinion about it, either an agreeable or disagreeable one. That's all mind can do.
So that's the same, like writing a book about how I love to remodel a car, or reading a book about that.
Yeah. Or wandering through the cornfield at night to hear what the corn has to say.
And that's the same as reading Peter Brown's book, or
absolutely.
Or reading Jeannie Zandi's poetry.
Sure. Yes. Absolutely. What's the least or lowest common denominator? It's what's appearing in your experience, however it may be swayed, influenced poetically or otherwise, sensually or otherwise, in your present experience. Even a feeling of, you know, what would you call it? You know, the breath of fresh air, of the promise or presence of liberation, is again something appearing in your experience as a felt sense. Perhaps a lofty one, perhaps an enviable one from a spiritual seeker's point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. It's not to dismiss anything. It's not to say something or someone can be better or above that. There's nothing better or above that. There's just, right, what seems to be appearing through the portals of sensitivity that you possess or are, that you are made of. Those can be also, you know, somewhat hypnagogic. The five senses and the movement of thought, mind, association, abstract thinking, feeling tones, energy body, causal body, a causal body, call it what you will. Is just, wow, right? The blossoming of phantasm.
Um, Are we just gossiping now?
That's all anyone can do. We can't do any less or more than gossip. You know, even Ramana Maharshi sitting quietly on his, couch somewhere in Ramanasramam with the monkeys chirping and the peacocks loitering about. Even though he might not have had anything to say, he was gossiping. Gossiping in presence, right? Holding audience.
How's that?
Well, because there was an exchange of, call it vibratory harmonics. So the gossiping was presence, felt, imagined. You didn't have to be loquacious. Gossiping does not require spoken language to be gossiping. Let's say you have a few moments of ascension or some kind of transmission, harmonic of some kind, whether it's from a sunset, a koi pond, stubbing your toe, or reading Jeannie Zandi's poetry. Right? It's wow, wow. Textural, evocative data field. Occupying consciousness, appearing to or as consciousness, as if something were actually happening, or that it might have a consequence, or that it might be the consequence of something else, when presence is neither the consequence of anything, nor does it suggest anything henceforth that could be the consequence of it. Right? Now you're just kind of a village idiot streaming forth as the, involuntary recipient of an incredible field of textural data or sensitivity, much of which can be rendered in words, but one could argue most of which never sees the light of day as a word. I mean, we're playing around with, a curious form or a curious invitation to something you might call sobriety. Presence is so, but you're not tipping it to your mouth. You see, you're not sipping from presence in order to create the hallucination of a durable self. And yet, presence doesn't cease, and all of its profound, seductive powers don't cease. If anything, you could say as you become quieter, the seductive nature of presence becomes louder and more alluring. The sirens crawl not just into your sphincter, but they crawl into every single cell. Now you're alit with the unbearableness of being.
Unbearable? What do you mean?
Well, see what happens as, for an experiment's sake, when we refrain from identifying anything with anything, ourselves with anything, or anything with ourselves. Then you simply sink into a textural observance of, right, the cacophonous and mellifluous nature of presence. See what happens. One can become inebriated with the unbearable lightness of being. whether you have intercourse or not, or enjoy it or not, is not all that consequential. If you're lucky to get laid, rock on. If not, go to a different watering hole. But it's not obviously about, right, one's prurient successes. Or it can be, because you, right, it's you have your hand on the radio dial, so dial in the frequency that you like. If you can dial in a wealth frequency, dial it in. If you can dial in a, you know, hot girlfriend a week frequency or hot boyfriend a week frequency, dial it in. If you can dial in some, you know, micro dosing psilocybin, dial it in. If you want to become a civilian astronaut, dial it in. It's kind of funny if one gave you, offered you, you know, a ticket to ride. Right? Here's a ticket to ride. Be, see, feel, acknowledge, surf any way your heart desires. What would you do with it?
I don't know what my heart desires.
Okay, fair enough. All right, well, I don't think you're alone. I think, you know, most humble humans that are willing to look at the frivolity of their own present consciousness might also agree. I'm not really certain what my heart desires. But Byron Katie will tell me what it is. I can fall open with Adam Chaxfield, and then I'll know what it is. I can rest my head in Jeannie Zandi's lap after a good cathartic cry for how I was abandoned and sodomized by my uncle. And then I'll know what it is. And I do apologize to anyone and everyone that's been sodomized by a trusted parental figure. Because that really sucks. I mean, the church seems to get off on it, but I don't know. I don't know if that's what Jesus had in mind. Master, they're building a cult of pedophiles. Aren't you frightened? He said, no, I'll just insist that they wear collars so everyone will know what to avoid. Didn't work out. Jesus ascended kind of too early to warn the gullible species or victims of Christianity that the pedophile cult will be wearing collars. So it went hidden for a long time, until somewhat recently when, after decades, if not centuries, of abuse, hidden and deliberately sequestered abuse did that start to come out into current culture. Oh, well. Now there's the Panama Papers and the
Prime Minister. Billions of dollars in offshore tax evasion.
Prime Minister of Iceland just resigned because they were pouring into the streets because he had conflicts of interest that were hidden through offshore Panamanian companies that hid or suppressed legitimate taxation or possible conflicts of interest.
I love how they don't even say the U.S. people. Like, the ones I got, they just kept saying, and other U.S. people, other investor. I'm like, who are the U.S. people?
Listen, when you have fuck you money, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to talk to every assertive and aggressive, experienced attorney everywhere on the surface of the planet and find out what you can do to shelter your wealth from, you know, taxation in one jurisdiction or another. Uh-huh.
Yeah, well,
I think maybe that's what Jesus had in mind.
There's supposed to be a full publication of all the names in like a month's time or something.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun. I was just hanging out with Lisa, and it was fun, actually. I don't know what happened, but for some reason, while I was scrubbing her stove glass screen, she looked up Monsanto and all the companies that they owned, and she was like, wait a minute. She started, like, freaking out. I'm like, oh, no, it gets better. Let's really get into this. Like, Unilever is just one of their billion of companies, and they own another billion companies. And it's pretty trippy. You start looking, I'm like, they don't operate in billions of dollars. Like, what's above a billion? I don't even know, but they're like in another dimensional
absolutely
scale playing around.
Owning a huge slice of the terra firma, that which grows on it. You know, Nestle was just accused of being given permission by the U.S. Forest Service to pump millions and millions of gallons of water out of the California aquifer for a lease that really expired 30 years ago.
Yep. And take all the water away from the people and the farmers.
And it's like, well, you fuckers in California that have been suffering from a rather severe drought, don't you think someone ought to, like, you know, get on a donkey or something and ride over to Nestle headquarters and say, oh, hold on a minute there.
Yeah, I think they'll just shoot him with tear gas. I don't know.
Well, you know, the wonderful experience that came from the Occupy Wall Street movement, which was, you know, before the revelations that came out in The Big Short, right, that were documented in an entertainment media, right, that movement was successfully repressed and suppressed by, right, police militarism.
Yeah, that's what they did.
So a democracy that should otherwise value and cherish constructive revolution, meaning constructive change in representation and moral and ethical agenda, that's what the democracy should be really for, is the sustainability of the will of people enjoying inalienable rights. But instead, of course, the democracy becomes corrupted by cash and other tomfoolery, and instead suppresses and represses those that would have a voice to that cry foul. And so how did we get here from intercourse? Well, all roads lead to everywhere. None of which has to be antithetical or anathema to self-realization.
No, but it does seem like useful in terms of, like, it just seems like most people just stay in this very shallow framework of themselves, and they don't even really explore just, but you just see how trippy it is. You're like, it's just layers and layers of bizarreness that just don't make any sense. And fuck if anyone really knows what's going on or what, you know. And so I think that's just a really easy way to get a little trippy. Like, it's just like, dude, what the fuck's going on here? I mean,
I had beer with an ancient alien just the other day. Guy was like 12 foot tall. You know, like light came out of his fingers. He really likes that Samuel Adams stuff, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah?
Just put that shit away. Yeah. And the bartender happened to be a Sasquatch.
That's fun if you, I know I was tripping out on, like, how you were talking to one day about, like, one time you got on a thing about interplanetary travel or whatever, and how it would be,
transdimensional.
Yeah. it was fun. But it's the same analogy as when you go to sleep and you dream you know, you're instantly launched into another universe.
Yeah.
That could be happening in any second, obviously, but it's fun when it just kind of sinks in and you're like, I could actually be like an alien from another planet who just woke up in the midst of a corn, petroleum, sugar, you know, nightmare or something. I don't know.
Absolutely.
And like, this isn't really my life. I'm just exploring corn, petroleum, sugar, call it a nightmare or a dream. I don't know.
You better get your ass to Walgreens so you can get your flu shot.
Well, I'm still not going to do that.
Yeah, really, one step at a time. Let's take it slow.
Well, that doesn't mean I want to participate in it. I'm just checking it out, you know.
Of course. I just find it, you know, kind of foolish, if not somewhat snobby, by the Enlightenment crowd to eschew, you know, meaningful, thoughtful commentary on current events or political misanthropes or the, you know, hegemony of the 1% or the extinction wall and all of the incredibly cogent and if not beautiful evidence that says, watch out. You know, why pretend to deny all of that or exclude it from the inquiry field when it comes to the, you know, the beauty and the curious nature of whatever the fuck self-realization might be.
Yeah, I mean, well, that whole thing, you're just staying so myopically, like, if this whole thing is an extension of you, then talking about all that should be just as relevant because it's just you on different scales. Like, if you're not,
yes,
you just stay in this enlightenment loop. You're just, you're a fucking body. You're over and over just a body trying to get enlightened. And you're associating with this.
Yes.
Very small scale.
I think that whole paradigm of being a body in search of enlightenment is so, you know, 2015. It's time maybe for some to snap out of the hallucination of whatever is being sold as, you know, cathartic resolution, as falling open, as traveling lighter, as noticing, as, you know, turn it around. It's being sold out in the marketplace, which is more or less sold as some kind of remedy or accoutrement of self, you know.
But if enough spiritual teachers say that I need it, if they all agree on more or less the same thing that I need, then I must need that.
Well, okay, so you're a Nestle's child. You may as well be sucking down chocolate and sugar and baby formula and go get your, you know, healthy reboosts of all of your vaccines. Because you need that too. You know, vote for Trump because you need that too.
GROs. There's GROs now. Do you know about this?
GMOs, GROs.
Genomally recoded organism. They can recode organisms. Little bacteria that can recode other things.
Krishnamurti was somewhat prescient in warning his audience at the end of his life about the intersection between DNA programming and artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. He said they, who's ever running the laboratory, and it sure as fuck isn't you, who's ever running the laboratory is going to start, you know, coming up with replicative forms that are perhaps imbued with, you know, some kind of genomic artificial intelligence.
Yeah, well, it's funded by the defense industry.
Yeah, of course.
Why are they interested?
Well, I mean, because we're at risk. We're under threat. You know, we have to protect the democracy at all cost and pull out all the stops. So, you know, we need AI genomic programming. Yeah, so it's kind of like that that book, This Perfect Day, by Ira Levin, where everyone was living, most creatures were living under a highly medicated society, getting daily inoculations in their arms of drugs that kept them, you know, docile and quiet.
That's like that Divergent movie, right? Or something similar.
That's in a manner of speaking, yeah. And that one guy broke out of the mold by having this recurring dream that there was something else going on. And so he was capable of wisening up and stopped injecting himself with the daily dose by wrapping his arm, stuff over his arm, so he wasn't getting dosed. And then finally he escapes from the, you know, the perimeter of the encampment in which everyone's living, kind of like the Truman Show, and takes a rowboat to some island where a very small handful of so-called freely existing humans that were living beyond normal lifespans through cloning. They were cloning and therefore maintaining the integrity, so-called integrity, of their consciousness from life form to life form, body to body. And they were the ones that had these huge computer banks and whatever was necessary to control the rest of the global population. And they welcomed him when he showed up because they said, oh, it's wonderful every once in a while that someone breaks out of the mold to come and join us. And he said, well, that's so nice to hear. And then he blew them up. He blew them all up and all the computers too. And the end of the book, he's returning to the mainland, I think, in helicopter, and it's raining out. And
that's
there was
awesome.
There was something incredible that it was like, it was what, unpredictably or improvisationally raining out, which it hadn't done, and no one could remember when. That was his win. He killed the bastards, released the culture from the drugs, and it was raining out. And that's what we are. We are all under the influence of an incredibly...
very powerful spell.
Cogent and powerful hypnotic, sigillic spell that keeps us, moving sheepishly forward, being concerned about...
Faster and faster. I mean...
Absolutely.
It's crazy. I'm like speeding everywhere I go, and there's still someone riding my ass, and I'm like, am I supposed to go, like, as fast as I can go without dying? Is that, like, what we're looking for here?
Yeah, I mean, HARP and other, you know, so-called blatant activities for environmental and weather and consciousness control. But you could, you know, without being a Debbie Downer kind of thing, I mean, it's, in a sense, it's kind of fantastic. It's brilliant.
Well, and if it's just dreaming, and then it's just, you know, a dream, that's whatever, someone, or I don't even know if it's someone, right? Maybe it's Korn. This is Korn's idea of a good time. I don't fucking know. You know, like,
it's hard to know.
Or which, sugar or adrenaline or any of it.
Hard to know which plant to pin it on.
Depending on any, right, it's too weird.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
There still appears to be an invitation for a kind of new way of dreaming, which is fun to explore, I think.
I think
you got to kind of see what's going on openly and honestly in some sense to be able to go there, it seems like.
Well, I had the privilege of taking a walk with Suzanne today by the lovely Lake Galena. And we were playing around with this, you know, kind of notion, you know, things come in threes, so what? So, you know, phase one would be unconscious, of course, denial, because denial is not voluntary. You can't will yourself into denial. Denial as a way of being suggests that it's involuntary, that it's unconscious, that
yeah.
It's not chosen. It's just outside the realm of, you know, possibility. So... sometimes the way that we like to have fun and hang out is, you know, leaning into the membrane of denial. Pushing the envelope on what appears to be as conformist reality, suffering from abject denial, like the Christian right, or several states now permitting businesses to deny service to the LGBT community. Or the foreclosures on Planned Parenthood. And so these are aggressive, if not violent, forms of religiosity against culture, religiosity against truth, religiosity against what you might consider the true spirit of Christ consciousness. And those are a form of violation and a form of denial. Though someone that believes in whatever they think the Bible is would be happy to call me a heretic and say that, no, we must fight back against homosexuality. We must fight back against contraception. We must fight back against healthy and constructive abortion rights. Right? And so it's not a matter of evidence anymore. It's a matter of belief. Right?
Which is fun. That's where the dreaming thing, that's all it really, like, if you're looking for facts, you're not really going to find them. Like, it's, there's no fact and there's no fiction. There's just dreaming.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it's like, what if you, like, instantaneously, the invitation is to dream a different way. That has to be an instantaneous kind of thing.
Yes.
That you do, like, right now. I don't know.
Yes.
It's very jumbly in my head.
It's jumbly. You know, not just in your head. I think it's kind of jumbly. Because when we start peering into the nature of belief that does not really care for the existence of evidence, then one is operating in a kind of, you know, astral or etheric plane, insisting on what reality is or isn't for them and the members of their group, the members of their tribe. There are still, most people still believe that Andrew Wakefield is an evil criminal, when if you dig a little deeper, depending on the nature of your belief, you can see that he indeed is a hero who is exposing, you know, the criminal activity of a governmental system which implicates the FDA and the CDC and the pharmaceutical industry in the wanton and knowledgeable injury of hundreds of thousands or millions of people now having to suffer the fascistic indignity of getting mandatory inoculations.
Yeah.
I mean, excuse me. So I'm not sure, Gavin, if we've strayed too far from the thrilling nature of enlightened intercourse. I don't know. But one must, my bias, let's say, is one must be willing to come to grips with getting out from under the rock of denial and seeing with, you know, cogent intelligence where things are, where they're going, where they've been, what the warning signs are of a societal agreement that's failing and failing fast environmentally and in every other way, so that one can have the benefit of an excruciating and intimate encounter with powerlessness.
With powerlessness?
With powerlessness. Yeah, getting out from under the influence of denial means that one is capable of having an excruciating and intimate encounter with absolute powerlessness.
Why would I want to do that?
I don't have a reason, Gavin. I don't.
I would rather be powerful.
Well, in the Matrix, you know, you're a red pill guy versus a blue pill guy. Or a blue pill guy versus a red pill guy. I don't know.
I wanna join the clones and work those computers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't blame you. I mean, you can't, you know, nobody can make a cogent argument for why you or anyone might be willing to get out from under the influence of denial and keep an appointment with the excruciating intimacy of powerlessness, and from there, if possible, enter into a true shamanic contract. I don't have a reason you should do it.
If I experience a bit of that powerlessness because of lack of denial and so on, won't I get special powers? Afterwards, I get special powers.
Hmm. I don't know. You'll have to ask someone like Peter Brown that question. You know, a guy like that has special powers. I don't have any special powers. I don't exude anything. I'm not worth even talking to.
We all have such special powers. It's like so funny. Like, it's such exquisite biomimicry, you know, and like you embody that. Everybody is bizarrely, like, we like look at other animals that can biomimic something really well and we're like, wow, that's really cool. But that's like all this is doing, you know, it's just a weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, nobody can sell powerlessness. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, what do you mean by powerlessness?
Good question. What does it mean to you? I mean, your first salvo was to refuse it, to avoid it. You might have a different salvo, a different approach.
Yeah.
As you consider, you know, whatever the curious implications of powerlessness might be,
you. Well, if we with that metaphor originally from the book, right? So, so Bernie Sanders, he breaks out of the mold, rows the boat over to the other side, and blows up the computers, right? Which he's going to do in just a couple months, right? And then he gets. Well, I don't know if that's where is the powerlessness in any of that? But especially like after the computers are blown up,
yeah.
Right, then it sounds like there's a lot of power, and the power is just the power of freedom. You know?
Well, I would bet that, you know, poets and philosophers and anthropologists and people that are into the singularity would have some really interesting, you could say, opinions or prognostications about what would happen if. So who can say, you know, what would happen if? I mean, even placing confidence in the myth and mirage of Bernie Sanders is kind of like, you know, dreaming up some kind of affinity for an idea, right?
Uh-huh.
That's what we have. We have ideas. I mean, the World Bank is an idea, right? The value of the Icelandic kroner or whatever it is an idea, right? Whether you get busted for smoking crystal meth is an idea.
So there's more than that, like with, just to stick with Bernie Sanders, there's like this hope, right? Hopefulness. I think you could say the same sort of thing with like the Christian right that wants to deny abortions and deny service to LGBT.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
More vulgar form of hope, right?
Yes. I mean, you and I could agree without too much quarrel that would be a vulgar form of hope. But for them, it is a sacred trust. It's a sacred form of hope. And anything that we might think that could be construed as leftist or progressive, that would be the vulgarity.
But I think, yeah, the fun thing is when you start to see through it all, it's like you just see how arbitrary it is. Nobody has more money than you. They don't actually have any money.
They're just playing a game.
They're dreaming and playing a game.
Nobody's got nothing.
This is not what you think it is. Nobody has anything. There's holes and holes and holes and loopholes and all of it.
Well, the enlightened folk that one may, you know, honor or envy, perhaps, you know, where do they go? I mean, they're still here, you know, they're still eating and eliminating and bathing occasionally and, you know, wandering around having coffee or enjoying the company of friends that like to talk about this shit, right? But where have they gone? Have they gone anywhere? Or perhaps their capacity or sensitivity, the gift of dreaming or, you know, what would you say? Getting out from under the banal influence of self, right, could be kind of an enviable, right, atmosphere of belief or understanding or sensitivity. You know, they might call it reality, but they can go fuck themselves. We can't say what it is that, you know, Paul Hederman or Peter Brown or our friend, local friend with the dreadlocks, you know, are enjoying. Or Norio running around the country in his big rig with his guitar, singing cowboy songs in Japanese. What the fuck? What if there were no such thing as the idea of self-realization? Or let's say it was only an idea. And one had to figure out what was, you know, true, cogent, reliable for oneself. Where would you go? Here's this consciousness, right? It seems to be kind of abundantly available. Even if you don't ask for it, it's still, hello, right? Care for some consciousness? Well, you can't refuse it. You know, I mean, you don't wake up in the morning and go to the door and consciousness says, may I come in? And you say, oh, no, not today.
No, I would never answer. Yeah. I'd be hiding under my bed.
Yeah, hiding under your bed and consciousness crawls out from your pillow and says,
I got home.
Yeah, really. Consciousness, you want to come out and play? And you're like, oh, no, not today. And consciousness says, you can't refuse me. I'm sorry, yeah. You can't refuse me.
How about a kitten? What about a puppy?
Anything.
How about some money?
Yeah, so the conjuring that we do that pretends to align us with a life lived and or how that life has been enjoyable or how it sucked and how we hope to become enlightened someday, because it sure seems like Jeannie Zandi's having more fun than we are.
No, she's not.
She might not be. No. She might not be. Peter Brown swims with the angels, and that guy from The Godfather swims with the fishes. Luca Brasi.
I just seem to be encased in poop everywhere I go. I don't know what that means.
But. You swim with the poop. Gavin frequents various institutions where attractive women that meditate lurk.
That's way better than poop.
Yeah, poop. I think that's, you know, that rocks. What do we want from all this? Tell me, what is it that we want? I'm so sorry that Wayne Dyer's dead, because now he'll never be able to answer that question for me. Wayne, what do I want? If only I could be more like Pema Chodron.
I think you're going to have to go on a diet.
Jesus, you're probably right.
And maybe hit the tanning salon.
Sounds good. Put on some nice red robes, yellow collar. What do you got, Gavin? What's true for you?
What's true for me? I don't know. I kind of run out of questions. Usually I have a bunch. Let me see if I can pick up one somewhere.
Well, here's a possibility. You know, instead of, let's say, reverting to a default mode that Gary Weber likes to use that term, maybe he even credits himself with its creation, the default mode network.
Smart.
Right? The default mode network is, right, the movement of thought and rumination, association, and the genesis of self. So rather than go to some kind of question, right, what could you just say improvisationally about your current experience? Rather than asking someone else what the value of something might be. I mean, who gives a fuck? Right? If not you, who? If not now, when? Do I possess something that you don't possess? That can't be true.
You have the enlightenment experience.
No, I have not had an enlightenment experience.
And you live the non-dual reality.
I don't do any of the sort.
He goes to the movies and eats pizza.
And you're constantly suffused with joy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just ask my wife. Oh, he's so constantly suffused with joy.
I wonder about that too, because it's easy to put on a good face when you're around other people. Everybody does that, and you always think, oh, they're so nice. Then you start dating them, and you're like, oh.
I just whine and crawl around on all fours. She's like, get up. Really, if you in your, you know, dear, kind generosity, try to imbue me with living a certain way or being of a certain nature or quality, I can tell you with no hesitation, you are mistaken.
Right, you should together more than I do.
That's so untrue. I am no better than a chimpanzee going down fast. I get through the day by the grace of God that permits me to pretend to be authoritative in my field so I can take money from unsuspecting customers that it appears that I help.
While waiting for your next colonoscopy?
While patiently waiting for my next colonoscopy. So yesterday I went to see, yesterday, you know, I had a long kind of work day and I was like, gotta get out of the house, right? So I jumped over to the movie theater to see Zootopia in 3D. And as fate would have it, I was the only person in the theater.
Nice.
So I was really enjoying myself. Not in a Pee Wee Herman kind of way. It's an animated film. Yeah. And,
that doesn't mean anything, but.
No, yeah, I know. Still, that's true, right? That's right. You're alone in the theater. I don't care what's on the screen.
Zoo animals are cool.
Whatever it takes.
No, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So, you know, then I go to an Italian restaurant to pick up my lovely wife, maybe something to eat, you know, a little tiramisu, so I can kind of, you know, win her favor. You know, you bring someone you love dessert, and for a while they like you again. Not that she ever ceased liking me, but there's nothing wrong with reinforcement. Right, so, but it took 50 or more minutes for me to get a rather simple order from a restaurant that seemed to have a kind of a busy kitchen. And I was just starting to go ballistic with, like, impatience and rage and boredom, and I was overtired and my blood sugar, and it was too hot and stuffy in there, and I started hating.
Start waving your arms around.
And I was, at one point, I was just going to walk out in a rage and just leave the food behind. Keep my money. I don't even want it back. I just can't stand being here anymore, waiting for a goddamn simple dinner order. And then the Goomba behind the counter, you know, came by. I was like lumbering around going, blah, 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 blah. Then he starts fidgeting with my order after the lovely women had packed it so neatly, you know, to see what I had. And I was trying to explain to him what it is that I wanted. And he just didn't seem to be on the same planet as I was. I ordered one slice of tiramisu. It took over 15 minutes for someone to put it in a little plastic container and bring it to me. And I was like, I just can't stay here anymore. I was nearly in tears.
And then I can't handle this level of irrationality. I can't do it.
And I ran out of there, hopefully, thankfully, with my dinner and the tiramisu. And on the way home, I was just enraged. I just wanted to beat that guy up. I was hoping he'd come out of the restaurant to start yelling at me, and he was twice my size. I'm sure he would have killed me with a pinky. But I just wanted to drop my dinner, rip my glasses off my face, rush the motherfucker, and punch him into the parking lot and bloody his face. That's what I really wanted to do. And so I had to collect myself because I was driving home and you don't want to get into an accident. So I'm like, breathe, chill.
Yeah, smoke a little bit of weed.
Chill. Just loaded with disappointment and fatigue and everything you could imagine. And you know, Zootopia was about a bunny. It was about a bunny from a farm community that inspired to become a police officer in the big city, finally does become a police officer in the big city, cracks a huge case and saves the day. I run over on the way home. A bunny. I killed a bunny on the way home.
He's not going to become a police officer.
I fucking ran over a big, beautiful, innocent bunny.
Are crushed.
Darted out in front of my car without having time to react, and instead of running beyond, decides to stop in the middle of the road and falls right under my left tire. Ka-chum! You can feel the little mammal crushed to death under the wheels of your car. And I was like, I need to die. I should die now. I'm sorry. I'm no good. I went to see a movie about a little bunny that just that managed to ascend and transcend all everything. I end up in the hands of some Italian Goomba that looks like a Neanderthal who's foraging through my dinner without my permission after waiting more than an hour to get my meal, drive home in a rage, trying to breathe and take it easy, and I run over a bunny. So I just wanted to point out how deliciously enlightened and so full of joy that I am pretty much every day, 24/7.
But
you don't want to be exactly like me.
You just took away my hope.
Sorry.
Well, but I mean, that was funny to me. And so the fact that your dialogue is like funny to me is like that dialogue goes on in my head and my behavior is kind of funny to me in a weird way.
Sure.
That sort of, you can enjoy all aspects in some weird way.
I mean, you know, Paul Hederman gets in his old, you know, Jeep after speaking at length at a church on a Wednesday night, going out for dinner, enjoying company of friends, jumps in his Jeep, drives across the Golden Gate Bridge, goes home and goes to bed. Alone. You know. And you can actually watch him drive across the Golden Gate Bridge if you're what's that called when you're too close to somebody behind them? Tailgating. When you're tailgating. So you're tailgating the sage, watching him drive across the Golden Gate Bridge. And he looks just like anybody else behind the wheel of his Jeep, trying to keep his consciousness on the road, driving modestly in the right-hand lane. Too slow for me. I passed the motherfucker. You know? Like, what do you think's happening to people or what their, you know, so-called quality of consciousness is? And what's funny is as long as one's interested in even assessing their so-called quality of consciousness, well, you're too late. You're already inhabited. You've already been taken over by the virus of self, because now you're kind of interested in who you are, how you are, where you are, when you are, and what it is that's happening, and whether you're enjoying it or not. You're already way too late. Late to your own party once again. Night Sky Sangha, vote for Bernie, run over bunnies.
Bernie's going to be in a temple on Wednesday, apparently.
We're going.
I don't know if I could stomach the whole thing. There's like parking and RSVPs and we go. Beth, I was thinking we should have a Night Sky Sangha field trip. But
Beth wants to go.
Yeah, you're going?
Beth wants to go. I told her I'll go.
Damn, that'll be awesome. I don't know why he hasn't come here, but I'm sure he'll come here in late June before the California primary.
Well, I think I'll just let you go and do all the work, and you can report back for me.
I'd be happy to do that. With Beth by my side, anything is possible. Scale mountains. Eat tiramisu. We made a really nice bunny stew today.
Oh, did you throw them in a bag?
I didn't pick up the roadkill. I'm sorry. I should have. I am incorrigible.
So what was that you were saying about the improvise something from your present experience?
Oh, yeah.
Does that work?
How does it work? Nobody knows how it works. Let's say you could drill down into the most minute sigil or suggestibility of consciousness itself, of phenomenal expression. Right? What would you find? Would you find a particle? Would you find an object? Would you find a supreme being, preferably of male persuasion, with a long beard? What would you find if you could peer all the way down?
Wouldn't it be just like this sort of energetic movement?
Hard to know. Yeah, let's say you would be peering into a plasma as a plasma might peer into itself. Completely diffuse, without agenda, without directionality or vector, without time or space, without implication. You would be able to pierce the matrix, the genesis of phenomenal expression. You would move down to the lowest, least common denominator of the spark of consciousness itself, and you would find nothing. And yet in that discovery, you would not have necessarily transcended or ascended anything or gone anywhere. I mean, all that's appearing as the phenomenally expressed known universe is doing so as if it were, right, a plasma of dreamed, improvisationally appearing textures found in consciousness. But that doesn't make consciousness an object. You know, that could be the domain, let's say, which just happens to be this. We're not pointing out some kind of idealized location. This, that is, this is the domain of, you know, the realizer. And likewise, the domain of the so-called non-realizer. This is the domain that transcends realization, or that it might have bear fruit or have any utility. Association occurs spontaneously, improvisationally, perhaps randomly, chaotically, maybe conditioned, maybe unconditioned. It's hard to say. Feeling tone is felt, and curiously, we're capable of finding objects, circumstances, events, emotionality, sentimentality, accusation and definition, comparison, preference, discernment, differentiation. And thus we create a spontaneously appearing report on what we think reality is, or perhaps what it's doing and how it concerns us. And this is just apparitional.
that's what, like, in a weird way, like, the marketing and stuff is kind of capitalizing on. It's a weird loop. I know that's not exactly what, but anyway.
Yeah. The marketing is kind of like two birds with one stone. It both incarcerates you as an individuated creature suffering from or enjoying aversion and attraction. Then it sells you a solution.
Yeah. But, yeah, because it's just dreaming and there aren't really any facts, it can do, it's, that's as true as anything, and it kind of, it just, you know what I mean? It just, nobody really researches anything. You just watch the news, and of course, or you just watch TV or whatever, and of course that's all true and accurate, because, like, inherently it is, but it's not, you know, message is not, but, yeah. The content is not actually,
If we're looking for cogency of self, durability of self, utility of self, remedies for self, we've already, you know, we're in the box store. We've entered the box store and we've already put way too much shit in our basket. And then we're hoping, you know, to check out with all of our purchases and take them home and put them on our shelves or consume them somehow.
Or exploit other people with them.
That's absolutely right. That's right. Yeah. It's like we're just,
it's weird. It's
we're
really
just funny. Elaborate bacterium in a giant swap meet. Marco Polo and you know, other early world traders. You know, whether it was pelts and skins from Alaska or spices or teas. Or oil, or solar panels, or cash, or food, or fish. That's what we're doing. We're just, you know, a curiously appearing bacterium at a giant swap meet, racing toward extinction.
Hey,
apparently. Well, like a cancer growing as fast as it can in the path of least resistance toward death of the organism.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens to the cancer. Yeah.
The Gaiac foobar. Yes, Gavin.
Okay, so that's an example of powerlessness, right?
Sure. Yeah, that's one. Mm-hmm.
That's one.
Here's another one.
Oh, good.
So you like to walk. You're a powerful stroller. But here's a quote. The walker is defenseless because he is he who is beginning to be and never finishes being small.
Nice.
Yeah. There is a sort of power of powerlessness. And maybe that's just like the
Saint Francis was all about it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's how Saint Francis could call the birds to him, and it's the same way that Bernie does it.
Bernie is also calling birds to the podium by being powerless. Aligned with the divine spirit. We might as well turn Bernie into some kind of religious icon if that will assist him in becoming the president of the United States.
I dreamt of two.
What's he going to do as the president of the United States, though? Bring down the entire United States economy? I mean, you know, what can you... It's not really...
No, he'll end up in a pine box.
I mean, what... It doesn't, it's not going to work at that level, I don't think.
No, I mean, well, the fact that Bernie's on the scene and that his life has led to what he's trying to do and that his message is being heard by, frighteningly to them, large number of constituents.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a transformative.
It's a shockwave of revolution that's
coming. It's like a giant dose of psilocybin.
Bernie is a giant dose of psilocybin.
I don't know if he would quite be psilocybin. Maybe marijuana or something. But.
I'll smoke it. I'll drink it. I'll inject it. Whatever it is, sign me up. You see, Gavin, the funny thing, not for you, but all of us, right, is the curious reflex that we bring to the table pretty much 24/7, you know, involuntarily, to imagine ourselves functioning through a field of context or content, that our lives are meaning something, that we're negotiating and navigating reality in a certain way, that we're, you know, hoping to, hello, no far, that we're hoping to glean something from present experience or cultivate improved experience in the future, maybe spiritually, sensually, financially, or otherwise. And so we are consumed pretty much nonstop with the bane of separative existence. And that's driving us insane. The bane of separative existence drives us completely insane, drives us to the extinction wall. That includes somebody wanting to get enlightened. It's just another vote for extinction. But the teachers that sell enlightenment don't want you to know that, because you'll withhold your money from them. You see how this happens? In an instant, we take up residence as self. We conjure a sense of, how am I feeling? Why am I feeling that way? What should I ask? What my aspirations are? Where have I come from? Where am I now? How am I going to get to XYZ that I find myself valuing for some reason that I can't explain? Let's say I have, you know, a nice transmission experience in the company of an enlightened master, and I'm thinking, oh, that's got to be it for that.
You mean with your car, or...?
Whatever, you know, you can run over a guru or run over a bunny. It's pretty much the same.
No.
So the dilemma, you could say, has nothing to do with one's past or one's future. The dilemma has to do with what it is that's appearing now that we purchase as a defining context for our present experience.
Yes.
That's where samsara shines. Samsara doesn't shine in your past. It doesn't shine in your future. It shines now because of the involuntary assignment of context, content, and continuity of an imaginary self. That's, wow, that's samsara right up your ass. And if there were such a thing as realization, and let's hope that there's not, that would be seeing, you could say, the movement, the texture, the geometry of presently appearing samsara that places us in a context or a content that then we insist is a binding reality. And now we want enlightenment because it turns out we're bored or we suck or we're frightened or we're codependent or we hate ourselves and we want to feel what we think the guru is feeling all the time. And maybe if we're lucky, we'll move in with Luli Brown. or who knows, we'll move in with Jeannie Zandi, or we'll move in with Pamela Wilson.
Oh dear God.
My personal favorite is I want to move in with Rick Archer.
Who the fuck is that?
God, no.
I'm just teasing. Yeah, so you see how weird this is? It's like you have to create the imagination of binding circumstances which define who you are, were, and will be. Presume that those are binding at present, and then apply yourself to trying to wiggle out of it all.
based on a system that imaginarily, anyway, is full of holes, just large, gaping.
That's right.
Wiggle, wiggle.
We're just trying to wiggle in and wiggle out of whatever we think is happening that we hope should happen differently. Nonstop. Dreaming, deep sleep, waking consciousness, buying a muffin, buying a scone. Everything is somehow curiously always disappointing to us. I could go to a really fine coffee shop and get the best pastry and it'll be, this isn't enough. It's just not enough.
Chocolate croissant?
Yeah.
Not good.
Only I was eating this in Egypt. Then it would be okay.
So that's the funny thing is that once we've placed ourselves in this droll box of banal, boring horseshit that we want to get out of, it's too late. Because you've already built the cardboard and already glued it together and already closed the lid on tight. And then you imagine that you're actually possibly could be suffering from something that you want to get out of or you want to transcend. And you'll never transcend it and you'll never get out of it because it's not real in the first place. And if a teacher had any fucking sense, they would just say, hey, I mean, if you're feeling something around here, I'm really sorry. I mean, sometimes this transition shit happens. It doesn't happen with me, but I know that it happens with others. And if you're feeling it, they should say, look, I'm really sorry. It's just some weird fucking harmonic that happens because I'm fucking enlightened and apparently it's wearing off on you. But don't trust it. Instead of exploiting it. And exploiting other people because of that, you know, you could say that curious miracle of what we refer to as, you know, some kind of transmission, some kind of harmonic where you go into the company of someone that has a very, let's say, lucid appreciation of life and some weird thing is kind of exuded. It's, you know, it's like an entrainment and it's intoxicating. It's a total inebriation. There's no question about it.
Like standing under a full moon.
Like standing under a full moon.
Ooh.
I think you have to be willing to eschew the intoxication of the transmission that you may feel in the company of your beloved and get out. Get out and find, discover whatever is you're willing to discover, whatever you might be willing to imagine for yourself. Rather than remaining in the under the intoxicating influence of that, you know, most delightful, you know, curious phenomena of right the harmonics or the entrainment of transmission. Get out. Do this for yourself. Be willing to fail. Be willing to lose. Be willing to lose it all to see if you can. You know, dream your own liberation into view.
Take off the training wheels.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. And nope. And trust me, if you do it, no one's going to like you or very few people.
Oh, no. Anyway. No one's going to like you. Well,
you're on your own, baby.
You're on your own, baby. Because every
this is kind of fun. You're like, if you think I'm scary, this is good.
If everyone else that's still sucking from the teeth of the guru are going to be really intimidated if you somehow move out on your own and
you're scary then
and willing to inhabit this in the way that you can. You know, the best way that you can. It's a little intimidating because once we were all hanging out under the, you know, luscious gaze and influence of same Swami, and then someone said, "Oh fuck this." Hey Swami, hey I love you man, but.
Yeah, fuck you.
Fuck you. And if the Swami's a real Swami, they're like, and you too. You know, could be here, right? I'm buying. But that's all just, you know, it's nothing. It's nonsense.
Neither here nor there.
It's neither here nor there. Nonsense. Right presently, if there were such a thing, is right presently. You can see whether, you know, you're looking for a thing, begging for a thing, agreeing to a thing, believing in a thing, insisting on a thing, supplicating a thing, right? What the fuck? Are you really of the nature where you are, one, is urgently interested in whatever's next for the likes of me? Right? As long as we're on that train of whatever's next for the likes of me, then we are, you know, beggars. And nothing can intervene or will dare intervene in your, let's just say, right to be a beggar. In that case, you could say you have perfect free will to be a beggar, to continue to imagine that you are in a condition and that some other condition might be better than the condition that you think you're in, which makes you a beggar.
I have a right to be a beggar, man.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. It's gotten so bad, I use the same coffee grinds twice. And that second cup is pretty thin.
I hear you.
Yeah, really. You know, there's nothing wrong with peanut butter and jelly and day-old coffee, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. It's good shit, man.
It is. It's good shit. You see, consciousness, whatever it is, and there is nothing called consciousness, there couldn't be, but whatever it is, it fools itself into imagining that it's other than itself. And so now it's just full of restlessness. You don't do it. Nobody can take responsibility for how they are presently configured, how they are imbued. No one can. You're imbued and configured the way that you are, and so you're interfacing with reality, whatever might be, in the way that you do. And the miracle of it is that you can appear to exercise a certain quality of discernment, intelligence, humor, and elasticity to, let's say, reconsider the configuration that you're under the influence of. Now, that's a miracle, that consciousness can actually reconsider the configuration that it has placed itself under. In hopes of climbing out of the well that it's fallen into, so it can once again enjoy daylight. And it does this by itself. We call that spiritual seeking. We call that vipassana. You know, ayahuasca. Call it what you will. We can't say by what magical power or intentionality consciousness manages to fool itself into being other than itself and therefore suffering from the brand of restlessness, of individuation, of continuity. This is a miracle that whatever this is appears to show up and imbues, you know, bio units with individuation. That head, you know, rather quickly toward the extinction wall. Hey, it was really fun being conscious. Let's go extinct.
Fine.
Rock on.
Like, can we do it now?
Well, you know, the Jim Jones people did it and everyone got upset. Right? Those people in California that put silver dollars on their bed and all had white sneakers, you know, they went up to the mothership and took some kind of drug. They all died. And everyone was all upset. They were just.
They were out of here.
Yeah, they were just progressives.
That's the next step. We're like, oh, fuck it.
Well.
Poison pill.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who cares, right? It's all just like...
The Hemlock Society is probably made of very interesting people.
I guess these suicide cults have been around for as long as the...
They must be. You know, I mean, I kind of regret the suicide cults that wrap plastic explosives to themselves and then go to a soccer game. I mean, that's a bummer.
Well, you know, it's a bit forceful, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to take your own life, that's cool. Take your own life and go straight to Allah and get yourself as many virgins as you can fit on the head of a pin.
Oh, sounds tempting.
But why go to a soccer game where people are enjoying themselves just to blow everyone to smithereens? You know, for exactly what or whose agenda was that useful to?
Hmm. That's an idea.
What's so appealing about a bunch of virgins anyway? I don't know.
They're not going to tell you trying.
A, they're ridiculously inexperienced, and B, they don't want you anywhere near them. I never figured out why that was a good idea. Get away from me. You're one of my 40 virgins. Fuck off, dickface. That would be kind of funny, watching someone after they have successfully blown themselves up end up in a bardo with 40 virgins, and they're all like, get away from me. But Allah said, Allah's not here. Get out of my face.
On vacation, indefinitely.
Get out of my face, you dumb fuck. You blew off your own dick. What are you doing here? What are you going to do with that? Stump. It was like the unintended ramifications of the 40 virgins payoff.
We're in for it now.
We're really in for it now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, really.
Don't air this one.
Oh, wow. I came right at the right time.
Apparently so. You have to be somehow willing or crazy enough to outdream this shit. If you're not willing to outdream it, then it's going to continue to place you in an imaginarily binding context that you want to wiggle free from. And as long as you want to wiggle free from whatever it is that you think that binds or ails you, it's got you. So that, again, goes back to that, what you could say, the gift of powerlessness. Because if there's an insight, let's say, or an invitation into absolute powerlessness, then there's nothing you're interested in wiggling free from. And if there's nothing left that you're interested in wiggling free from, then this can just fuck off. That would be freedom. Not remediation, not justification, not consummation, not actualization, not even self-realization. It would be the revelation that there's nothing to wiggle free from. It sounds like Fred.
Oh, sorry. Wow.
Wow.
This shit's so good, even the dog fell under the sway of it.
Yeah, he's just got his head, he's like,
see that? We put Fred into like a realization swoon.
Or the other way around.
Yeah, either that or he hates you guys, and he's like, Megan, stop.
Yeah, right.
What'd you say?
Yeah, man.
That's Fred just saying, I snore in your face, you Frencho fowl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I am a dragon.
Fred should have in his own window too. I don't see Fred in the little.
He should have his own box.
Yeah, Fred should definitely have a window.
Totally.
I don't have in that much capability. I can just put him on.
Look, he's sort of the star of the show.
Yeah. I don't know. That's not
Freddy boy.
He's pretty much got his head in my armpit. It's not a good angle to get.
You know, you can look at how the miracle of association occurs in the first place. You know, what is the genesis of one's, call it experience or consciousness or body of association that's capable of placing you in some kind of context, with or without content, that you then presume which accusation is true? And then it gives you the impetus or the motivation to respond to it somehow. Right? Samsara is the myth of having to respond to something that's not actually true.
It's like what just happened was like, so, you know, Fred made a couple funny noises, then we all made some kind of comment about what we thought he was saying. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah. The moment that we suggest or insist that something is true about our present experience is the right effervescent movement of delusion. And thankfully, there's no how-to, because a how-to has to imply that you're in a condition of some kind and that there's skillful means for you to find yourself in some other condition. That's a how-to. So there can't be any how-to, because you're not presently in a condition that could possibly benefit by morphing somehow into a more pleasant or cogent condition. Somehow we, you know, stumble into or wiggle free from the hallucination that this is my life. I wouldn't want to call it anything, not falling open and not jacked open and not jacked off and not traveling lighter and not nothing. I wouldn't want to call it anything, because that becomes, again, the hint of an accoutrement of self, an accoutrement of one's experience, an enviable one, a sought after one. It's not a denial or a refusal. It's not an acquisitive movement or vector. That's right, Fred.
Is that loud? I'm sorry, I'm rubbing his ears.
If I had a Fred, I'd be rubbing his ears too. I do, as a matter of fact, I do have a Fred, but she doesn't want me anywhere near her.
Have you rubbed her ears lately?
I'm going to go for it and see. Maybe we can get to know each other.
Nothing like a good ear massage.
Nothing like it.
I don't have a Fred either.
Hmm. We can put up a collection.
Or give yourself like some stray cat or something.
I know.
She is a stray cat. She's hoping to be found herself.
Oh, really?
Meow.
I didn't know that was a possibility.
Meow. Meow.
Parasitic cat.
Yeah, and then you can just go hang out with the cat and be like, the cat needs food. I need money for the cat. Isn't it cute?
Radiant serendipity is in your face. You want to make something of it? You're fucked. Radiant serendipity doesn't insist that something need be true about itself, about you. Radiant serendipity places no demand. It has no confusion. It's not interested in figuring out what it is or why it is, where it is, when, how it got there. Radiant serendipity is the ultimate go fuck yourself. All genocides and holocausts occur in radiant serendipity.
That's the hard leap to make.
It doesn't make any fucking sense, but nobody asked you.
That appears to be the case.
But nobody asked you.
It seems to be okay with sodomy and...
mm-hmm.
Maybe even say it enjoys it. I don't know.
I think we should, like, open a laundromat.
Ooh, yeah.
With, you know, tables.
Just hang out there while people do laundry and make money.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah,
yes.
just sit around and...
We should open a...
And loiter in the
marijuana / laundromat in Colorado.
Yeah.
Here in Toronto. Yes.
Cherry Cokes.
Oh, yeah. See, you can get some weed under your laundry.
Yes.
That's
fish sandwiches from McDonald's.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Donuts from Costco. Be a really, really cool place to hang out. Gavin, don't let us keep you if, you know, you got important things to do.
What could he possibly be doing?
We've just all fallen through the cracks here, so we're not really all that useful. We have fallen far below the safety net.
Crackless crack.
Crackless crack.
Crackless crack, Sangha.
Where's the crack, man? Where's the good stuff? Oh, shit. Oh, well. Oh, well.
This is just a Soma party.
Oh, well. What are you going to do?
Whenever this train arrives, I wonder whether we'll get off.
Huh? What train?
Gavin, if you want to fold some laundry, I'll send mine over.
Fold laundry.
That would be the wave of the future if we could just, like, pass beverages and laundry through the computer.
Well, once everything is virtual, just like it is now, we'll just have an embedded virtual reality where we will.
I like it.
And no, it won't make any difference either way.
Yeah, we'll have an absolutely untaxable barter society through a two-dimensional medium where we could pass beverages, cash, services, and laundry.
And dirty socks.
Hey, Jeff, could you speak some more about the... that willingness to speak with one's own voice, right?
Oh.
Because
Well, don't ask me about it. Just do it. What do you got?
Well, it's a lot easier just to listen to some guru character take up all of the air and speak for me.
It can be. It can be. It can also be kind of infuriating or boring.
Well, yeah. Not if they put on a good show.
Agreed, yes. If it's a good show, then it's worth listening to for a while.
Yeah, and if I get my enlightenment slumber from it, if it knocks me out a little bit.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Yeah. Oftentimes I have difficulty putting myself out with my own talk.
Yeah, that I understand. Sure, yeah. Well, it's always a risk, you know. You reach into whatever the present moment is or whatever presence might imply. Reach into yourself, which is the gift of your own imagination, which is the gift of your own capacity to feel, right? And from there, you could say you start to have, let's just call it, entertaining opinions about the nature of reality or the non-nature of it. And you can borrow from your, you know, Hindu studies and Buddhist studies and Zoroastrian studies and come up with interesting, you know, metaphors and poetry that you've heard before, and you simply say, oh, well, what the fuck is this? Well, I don't know. Well, what's on its mind? And maybe it will, you know, imbue you with something to think, something to feel, something to say, which it's doing anyway, all the time. It's just that we fall into a certain groove, you know, a certain pocket of comfort, which looks like the repetitive nature of me and my beliefs and superstitions and irritabilities and aspirations. So reach back into the potpourri of your present experience and see if you can't find something that's even novel to you. Surprise yourself.
Yeah. Well, that desire to let the guru speak for me, or just sit back and listen.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same sort of or it's similar to just the desire to remain in the social stupor.
Okay, right? Yes, can be, sure. Yep. It's safe. If you're a recipient, if you're an audience member, whether it's at a Trump rally or, you know, a Peter Brown satsang, then you're an audience member. Then you're, you know, baking or basking in the hypnotic atmosphere that the speaker is, you know, perhaps alluding to or creating or whipping up.
Just kind of what we do with, like, marketing and it's just the whole thing, you know, the whole entrainment. That's like a bizarre entrainment of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's dreaming he's chasing a rabbit.
He's chasing a rabbit. So this is an exercise in a sense, Gavin, you know. You take the risk to dream out loud. Speak to yourself, you know, go for a walk somewhere and give yourself the best satsang you've ever had. Right? Make shit up. Just fling it out there, you know, and see if something sticks. It's kind of like loosening yourself up from the habit or comfort zone of a repetitive script or a repetitive story. Right? Be willing to see if there's another muse that is inside you or available to you that has a different voice, a different strategy, a different view. And so he speaks kind of a little askew of the way you might normally speak. You dream out loud. It's like you're writing a film noir script improvisationally, conversationally. It's a whodunit. You're always a whodunit. And you're not quite sure who was murdered or who the perpetrator might have been. But there is a cadaver. And the cadaver turns out to be you. You have to solve your own murder. You know, it turns out it could have been a suicide.
I'm a cadaver?
Aren't you?
You look that way from here. Yeah, what if you gave voice to, you know, the improvisational bubbling up, gurgling forth of your, let's call it engagement or interactivity with consciousness as a loquacious imaginary exercise. I mean, grab a soapbox, go to the El Cerrito Plaza, and then just start selling something. Just for fun. Hey everybody, I'm Gavin. I'm not really sure what I'm going to speak about. I don't have a particular political agenda or anything, but I just thought I'd stand here and talk with you about whatever came to mind. I mean, you have experience as an improvisational, right? Actor. So, you know what improvisation feels like and looks like as you inhabit different personas and then articulate their story without any premeditation. Well, that's present. You're inhabiting yourself and coming up with a script or a scenario that could very well belong to somebody else who dwells in your imagination. And what's the difference between that and who you take yourself to be? Scare yourself a little bit. That's a different kind of yoga, right, than asking a sincere question of the so-called guru authority du jour and seeing what they have to say about it. What the fuck do they know? What could they know?
Maybe we should have Peter Brown ask us questions.
Probably. Won't be interested for very long, but, you know, might get a few minutes out of it. But, I mean, you know, Peter is a professional know-it-all. I mean, he's dedicated his entire life to it out of, you know, karmic proclivity to be kind of a cosmic know-it-all. Mm-hmm. And what's wrong with it? You know, he has experience with Dzogchen, apparently, and Kashmiri Shaivism, apparently, and Western occultism, apparently, and anything else that he, you know, may claim to have experience with or have something cogent to say something about. Certainly, you can ask him a tarot question, and before you know it, you're circling Saturn. And he loves that. I mean, you can see him, you watch him. He literally thrives on, you know, being given kind of a curious conundrum or puzzle or question, and then just, you know, free associating and taking everyone on a ride around, you know, the perimeter of Pluto or the Andromeda Galaxy, and then coming back and landing safely at a coffee shop and taking another sip of, you know, Mochiata.
Macchiato.
Fred likes it. He's like,
I'll have a double
macchiato.
You'll have a macchiato. You mean a macchiato? A Ralph Macchio. I'll have a double Ralph Macchio and a pinch of Karate Kid, please. Two shots or one? I mean, it's fun to pretend to know stuff about stuff and have, you know, an absolutely creative way of expressing and revealing, call it, you know, connections or implications across, you know, the cosmic triumvirate. I mean, we had a really fun conversation about, you know, the call it the three gunas, or the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, or the Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya, and whatever, Dharmakaya. And looking at, you know, or the Tao, and looking at, wow, how does manifestation do what manifestation does? And why in this, you know, singularity of brilliant serendipitous expression do we somehow conjure some kind of cogent notion or handle on three? How does that even occur? It's not like there is a Dharmakaya or a Sambhogakaya or a Nirmanakaya or a Sattvaguna or a Tamaguna or the other one, Rajaguna. What? There's just, whoa, right? Improvisational texture blinking and appearing, right, and soliciting your attention. It appears as if objects are being found. And the fun part of the conversation was, if you look at Dharmakaya, in the Christian thing, that was like the Father, right? The unmanifest, the unperturbed and unperturbable. That was the notion of the Father, right? And the Son is the Nirmanakaya. That's the realm of express, phenomenal, right, texture. And the Holy Spirit, that's the interesting one, Peter was pointing out for fun. That's the Sambhogakaya, that which appears as the membrane between, you know, the nirvanic quietude and the samsaric restlessness. Is this third notion of that which you could say is somehow, you know, getting the other two to speak. That was the Holy Spirit. And you're like, Peter was saying for fun,
getting the other two to speak? Wait.
Yeah. Peter was saying, you know, we think we want to place the emphasis on the Dharmakaya, which is the unmanifest, right? Brahman.
Right.
Or we want to place our emphasis on the Nirmanakaya, the manifest, because that's where the juice is. That's Brahma Day. But
right.
He said, wow, why don't you place your emphasis or interest on the Sambhogakaya, the so-called, you know, interface between that which is nothing and that which appears as everything.
That's what you're saying as the Holy Spirit.
Holy Ghost, yeah, right. Holy Ghost energy, like Robert Duvall.
Robert Duvall.
It's funny because that Ten Commandments thing just popped in my head again. I'm like, love thy father and mother. It's so fucked up.
Yeah, right.
Honor the system.
So it's not so much a matter of knowledge, though, you know, appreciation of various systems, whether it's tarot or Western occultism or whatever, have a kind of a playful, implicative vocabulary. So that's kind of thrilling. But the real thrill is just to go on the journey, just to go on the dream ride of the appearance or apparency of, a destination or a source or origin or a genesis of some kind. So you're kind of, you're dreaming big. You're dreaming with joy. You're dreaming with abandon. Why not? And none of that has to be either an obscuration of realization, a vehicle of realization, or an expression of realization. Or it could be all of those. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, that was very good. Thanks.
Yeah. So, we'll have a phone call and you'll be the mouth.
Okay.
We'll ask you questions.
Okay. Sounds good.
No.
When are we going to do it?
We'll leave it up to him.
Should we start now? No.